Here with Jean-Francois McGuire-Ferreau from Behavior. Nice to meet you. I always like to start with just tell me a little bit about yourself, where you came from, how you started the industry, when you joined Behavior. And
so I'm Montreal born. I did my degree at the Technical Technique of Montreal, so in computer engineering. I was not planning to go to video games.
What was the original plan?
First plan was to go into industrial computers.
Okay.
So I worked in the sawmill industry for 2 years. I went to all of Canada, United States, where there is lumber, putting in sawmill equipment. I did that for 2 years, and then I joined Behavior as a programmer.
Right. In a different name back then.
Yeah, it was called like Artificial Mind and Management. And so I started as a programmer. After 2 years, I became a lead programmer on a game called Wet, which was ended up being published by Bethesda.
I remember that game, yes.
It was on 360 and PS3 at the time. It was our own custom engine.
Yeah.
Having your like professional engine didn't really exist,
right?
And the price tag for, let's say, Unreal was very, very expensive. So we had built our own deck. Behavior had been virtual management at the time, had already been in business for 12 years or 13 years at the time. So it made its own dimension that was already multi-platform at the time. So that was our...
The PS3 was not easy to program.
No, that's it. And I think it was the third game engine that we had done. And then I slowly became game lead. I worked on a game called Sims.
Just a tiny game.
On the Wii. And then on a bunch of other kids game titles. And then in due time, I became a programming director. So that's in, you say, 2013 or 14. And at the time, it was a lot of the company was growing, and we had to grow and to train team leads, programming team leads. So I was acting as a guide to them, not necessarily as a technical director, but trying to manage how do you minimize risk from a planning perspective, making sure that you tackle the right topic at the right time with the right folks, making sure to minimize dependencies, so that kind of work. So helping out team leads to work with that in the capacity. And then I moved over to the franchise game, Warhammer Eternal Crusade.
What's the game? Sorry?
Warhammer 40K.
Okay, 40K, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So that game shipped. It was our... So as we were building that game, there was a small project being programmed or developed at the same time called Dead by Daylight. So at the time, we didn't know it was going to be the success that it became, but I was on the bigger title.
Okay.
The Warhammer
title. You're like, that's going to get all the credit. Yeah, exactly.
But it didn't pan out in the end. Making a game like this was difficult. We shipped it. It had its audience, but not to the level we wanted. On the side, Dead by Daylight exploded.
Simultaneous?
They were about the same. The game Dead by Daylight released in Green E3 at the time. Turn Crusade released in September.
Okay.
Later in the summer.
Gotcha.
So it didn't pan out. And then we tried to make a few other games on our side, and that's when I became head of production.
Okay.
Essentially, Behavior had changed from having with Dead by Daylight and changed the way the structure of the game, the company was built. So working with having a division to create original product while maintaining our past and for a higher capacity on the side. So I became in charge of production for internal products.
Okay.
Not on the product side of things, on the roadmap of the product, but managing the dev teams. I did that for a few years until recently when we decided to change the way we work again because we wanted to have one unified production unit. And so essentially, we reshuffled internally the whole structure of the company. And now I'm in charge of the operation. So helping all the other executive producers, our VP production, the company to be more efficient.
Wow. Okay.
So it's more of a cross-functional role that I've got right now.
And are you productions for both your games as service and your original games?
Yeah, so now we no longer have those divisions. It's only like we've got projects that are either originals or with the higher.
Okay.
So we're not making the distinction as to it's per project.
Yeah, that's a fairly new change.
Yes. Oh. That was done 2 years ago now.
Okay. Okay.
And it's something that has made, which for consumer, you don't see anything.
Right.
It doesn't change. It does change how we work.
I bet. Because it's probably easier to trade resources internally because they're not different.
There's more mobility.
Yeah.
There is more. It's easier to share knowledge. It's easier to share perspectives. One thing that is great about behavior is that we work with the big companies as well. We work for hire companies.
Right. Right.
So we learn the good and the bad, and then we can use reuse those perspectives. Obviously, you can't share code or assets and things like that, but perspective.
Right. And maybe how the pipeline went, maybe they had this really innovative way to like
organize things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I like that you talked about the history because when I was looking at the game catalog from Behavior, it is an interesting read.
Yes.
I feel like, Scooby-Doo games, yep. You've got like Disney Channel games,
yes.
and then you've got Dead by Daylight.
Yes.
Dead by Daylight, which obviously continues to take the world by storm. And a lot of that, I think, is you're doing a bit of a Fortnite light approach to it, where Fortnite kind of bought 10 million properties, let's jam them all in Fortnite. You're like, what's a really iconic horror thing we can add into the game? And I know you've made relationships with Aliens and Freddy and all this stuff. Like, how did that start? Like, what was the first incubator of, like, we have these great original characters, but what if I was to bring in Jason, or what if I was to bring Mike Myers? Like, how would that...
When we... So I was not on the team at that point. When the start of working on the game, we wanted to make it a Hall of Fame for the horror characters. So it made sense to go after these guys.
Yeah.
At the beginning, it was more difficult, and now it's becoming easier and easier because people like, it's now they understand more what we can do with it. And it became a trend also in the market along the same time as
right.
well. So you see that you mentioning Fortnite, it's the same thing.
Right, yeah.
It's like
a new DC movie comes out.
They're going to try.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
But, so there are different challenges depending on the licensor. If it's a game dev, they've got their own forks. If somebody is just wrote a book
right.
or a movie,
yeah.
Again, different forks, they don't necessarily play games.
Right.
So it's always a challenge to explain. In DVD, you're not touching the characters. Like you're not, there's contact, there
yeah.
is. And then our people need to be about the same size. So Chucky was fun. So it's always, how do we adapt a character
right.
to the gameplay that needs to exist in that idea?
I hadn't thought about what you said about the cross promotion, but it's so amazing how marketing has evolved, right? That you just made me think of that. Like, if a new, Halloween movie is coming out, like, they'll probably approach you and say, hey, can you re-put in these kind of aspects? That's very interesting stuff. obviously there's a lot of focus on Dead by Daylight. It's a massive seller. It's continued, and you have some spin-off games like the dating sim game. How did that work out?
We're doing a case survey every next month. And back then, we were probing, so what kind of game would you like to play with the Dead by Daylight universe? And that was one of the choices. So there were discussion about, do we turn that into an Easter egg?
Okay.
At some point. And you know what? Let's do it for real.
Let's just do the game. That's hilarious. And I know that you've got your own studio, but when I was going through, it kind of blew my mind that you bought Red Hook recently.
Yep.
You did Darkest Dungeon. How did that come about?
Again, the whole thing of horror, right? So we want to make sure that, so we've got a lot of titles and we publish a few titles, but we want to concentrate on going forward to be able to not own horror, but making it a Hall of Fame. So with DVD and outside of Death by Daylight, right?
Right.
So that's where Red Hook comes in. Same thing goes for 7 Days to Die that we recently purchased.
Right.
So now they're part of the team. And so, again, combining resources, understanding what's the market.
Right. So are they under your umbrella as well?
No, so I don't have none of those products are under my umbrella.
Okay.
I'm supporting all of those teams.
Okay.
So I'm not in charge of those.
Okay.
I'm working with all of the executive producers for VP Production.
Gotcha.
That are working on those titles.
Gotcha.
Across the board.
Gotcha. In your bio, you talk about the importance of scoping and quality of life and making sure that, I think you guys were innovative in abolishing French some time ago as well and made some headlines. So how did that personal philosophy come to you and how do you keep maintaining it as the studio grows and becomes such large scale projects?
There's a chat with every day. So whenever you're, so I'm not saying that we never do overtime.
Of course.
We never plan for
it. I do overtime. Everyone does overtime.
Yeah, but we're not planning for it. It's
right.
Never the solution.
Right.
It may come at the end when you've got a milestone or game that needs to ship. We used to do tons of kids' games that were linked to movies. They're not going to move the date of the movie if the game is late.
Right.
And sometimes you're near the moment where it's now or never. Adding new resources will work because you're going to slow down the process. So, yes, we'll do overtime. But what happened in the past is that sometimes we misunderstood, we misscoped, we didn't know exactly what to do, and we ended up creating having a black box that we were deciphering what was going on along the way. So we made an effort, a conscious effort early on around 2015 to say, give and take, no, let's be cautious, let's scope everything, let's understand the depth, let's make sure that, sure, sometimes you're going to miss it, but let's make sure that you put risk levels and scoping the work ahead and then re-scope along the way as you're getting a better understanding of your work ahead. It's more difficult when you're trying to create your own game because you've got a pitch for yourself, but is that fun?
Right.
So this is just a constant pressure to understand what's the road ahead. And understand how things are in terms of, okay, how much time do we have left? How much capacity do we have left? Should we add people? If you're doing overtime, you're burning the candle on both sides, meaning that sometimes what you need is time. You need to sleep on your decisions.
Right.
If you're rushing your decisions because you're working late, there's a good chance that you're not making the right call. Yet. So making sure that adding more folks, it should always be, or simplifying the design should always be the first solutions.
Right.
Going to adding more people is good up to a point, crunching.
Right.
Maybe. I mean, if there's a problem, then by daylight over the weekend, we'll come in, we'll fix.
Everyone drops everything. Right.
But we never plan for.
Right.
Is it intense, the behavior? Sure, it is. It is. It's intense. But we're not. I think that Amy, our CEO, says, well, when you're done with work, get home.
Well,
be done with work.
Yeah.
We don't have a food bar or anything to play around. You can't play pool at the office.
Right. You're encouraged. Your work's done. Go home.
Go home. Okay. It doesn't mean that people don't stay together at our happy hours.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. But there's no culture of staying in the office for the sake of it.
Right.
So once you're done with work, you're done with work.
And touching on culture, how have you seen the culture evolve in your company, you know, as you become much more successful and has it been an attempt to keep it somewhat the same, or has it inevitably changed just because you're now successful?
There's always a our CEO is always very present. A lot like the senior leadership that is just right above my head, and then even my layers, my peers, a lot of them have been around for many years. So we share the same vision, and behavior has a lot of people with very long tenure as well. So that helps.
Right.
We doubled in size since the pandemic, so that was a challenge.
Yeah, it's rare for studios.
It's rare. We've added international studios. We've got an office now in Toronto. We've got an office in Millsboro in the UK. We've got another one in the Netherlands in Rotterdam. So those studios were acquired within the last 5 years, or built. Toronto was actually just open. We didn't acquire any studio. And so that was a challenge.
Okay.
Because it's not only the culture of the company, it's also to make sure to understand the different vision from different countries. As you can tell, I'm a Francophone,
right?
So there's a gap with just America, with the rest of Canada a bit. Not that, but there are some things that are slightly different. Same thing with the U.S., same thing with the U.K., bigger, a bit maybe more difficult or some challenges in terms of understanding the gap with certain countries in Europe. So, and we've got people from around the globe at the office as well. So
right.
This is also a way, just it's a culture that evolves, going from a work-for-hire culture to, hey, we've got to fix success, how do we bridge the gap? But there is a lot of movement also within teams, people that done work for hire now and then ideally and vice versa. So there's a lot of movement. So it's making it was made naturally, I would say, but it's kind of a struggle, especially when we peaked. We're now 3 days a week in the office, which helps. When people were all remote during the pandemic, that was challenging.
Right.
It's very challenging to try to get a culture that lived in the office. To go virtual, that was something that was easy with people that we had known from the past, but we were physically in the office, so it changed.
Right.
So it's a constant effort. It's to make sure that we're backing our values as well, that we live those. They're not just things written on the website.
Right. You're trying to actually live them. Especially with your new partners.
Tell them what it is, and they to feel where it's coming from as well. And
right.
that feels new. Wow. It feels genuine.
So you touched on a little bit. What challenges were you not prepared for having international offices? Like time zone is probably the big one.
Yeah, time zone is the big one.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in Montreal. We've worked a lot with publishers that were on the West Coast, which is a challenge, but very useful from time to time. Having the team earlier than us and ending their days around noon.
Yeah.
Is quite something. Yes. And you have a few projects that are actually were built in four locations.
Okay.
So that's
like the Ubisoft model where there's
not in the scale, right?
Right.
Talking about a team of 45 or something,
not
right?
10,000 people or whatever spread across. Yeah.
But just that, how do you organize?
Yeah.
The leadership was not spread evenly. So we had to work to put best practices in place. So that's a challenge. Again, when we acquired the studios, the other studios were not working exactly the same way we were working. So adapting that, understanding it, and we're working with partners that have their own ways of working. So there's an extra layer there of complexity. So I think that's one of the challenges that we face. It's still not solved. But, meaning that we found solutions for some of the problem, but I don't think that the time zone are there, so there's nothing that we can completely fix other than having people working at night, but that's not going to be an option.
Right, exactly. As you kind of hit a bigger success marker than you probably ever had within My Daylight, have you noticed your code dev opportunities shifting?
They changed quite drastically.
Yep.
We went in, and it changed not only for that, but it changed because the landscape changed as well. I mean, we used to do a lot of kids games. Kids games are no longer on console or movie games, I would say.
Right.
Those are no longer on
the platform. Yeah, they don't get paid anymore. Yeah.
And if they do, they exist,
right?
They're on mobile.
Yeah.
Right? And so we're doing less and less mobile games. That's because that's not our forte.
Right.
But it changed the type of relationships. Now that we've got that, we're working on different titles that are
premium, high profile.
We've been working with different partners, Microsoft, over the years, different business, Ubisoft, different titles. So the mandate that are more ingrained with our existing teams as well, because they know that they can call us. And work over helping them out with, you know, we've got the expertise, we know what it is,
right,
to maintain a game that is solid and fun with.
Live service games are tough.
Yep.
I think we all know this. Every time a new one comes out, it's almost like, will it succeed, right?
Yep.
So you guys nailed it. How did you adapt to it? I think your 40K was a kind of live service game too, wasn't it? Like,
I was planning for it, but it's that game, it didn't work out, but it for different reasons.
Okay.
I would say Dead by Daylight was built as a way to expand easily. And it's, over the years, it became more difficult to find simple solutions or simple ways. But I mean, we've got an amazing team that find ways to create new killers.
Right.
But again, we've adapted because we listen. We watch what's going on. We're in contact with our community at any given time, listening, trying our best to answer their questions or their answer their needs or their wish. So I think that's the
that's how you're
keeping it, understanding where the landscape goes, trying things, navigate things. Sometimes we make decisions. We'll pivot.
Yeah, it's similar. I talked to the creative director of Helldivers at Migs, and they had the same thing. Like, you know, they had this massive spike, and then they're just trying to maintain these, these graphs. You probably see the same graph, right? Spike, flat, right? And then every now and then you release something and it just flat, nothing spikes,
usually,
right?
There's always a bump.
Yeah.
The bump is not necessarily as big as that as the other one.
Right. That's it. Last question before we wrap up. Is there anything new coming on the horizon you are allowed to talk about that you can share? And if not, no big deal.
No, it's gonna be tough for me.
Okay, okay.
I'm on the sad part of things, right? It's making sure things stay afloat.
Gotcha. You're not in the creative room with the door closed, whiteboard against something.
I know what they are, but it's not me to discuss.
No, no worries. Sometimes it's nice if you have something cool that's coming and it's been talked about. But sometimes it hasn't been talked about.
Our anniversary stream on DVD,
okay,
which is happening on May 14th.
Okay, and they'll talk about a few things.
Yes, as usual, like that stuff.
That's when they sprinkle.
Yeah. That's fun people will talk.
Okay, are they looking to do something outside of DVD? Not that you know yet? Okay, never mind. All right, well, Jean-Pascal, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. I hope you have a great talk tomorrow and you enjoy the conference. Thanks so much for talking. Have a good one. Thank you.